Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open with some good news about the Society of Professional Journalism Awards held this week, and that included four awards, one by East County Magazine, including one for our radio show right here on KNSJ, and we'll have the details. Then, from Public News Service, we have some top national news, including the Russia probe expanding to include Trump's businesses, the DREAM Act reintroduced in Congress, and Donald Trump appointing a top science advisor who is not a scientist. Then, in local news, hear about a lawsuit filed against the city of San Diego by homeless people. On Crime Beat, we'll have the latest on the attempted murder of an El Cajon police officer and a fund set up by the police to help Ayesha Booker, a homeless woman with seven children who came to the aid of the fallen officer. Then hear about the apprehension of a suspect for a kidnapping in El Cajon. In La Mesa, we've ferreted out some hot news about a group seeking to legalize ferret ownership. San Diego supervisors have okayed body cameras for sheriffs. And if you need psychiatric help, it's now available online, the county wants you to know. 2 weeks after the 4th of July, the county is still seeking the owners of 24 lost dogs in local shelters. On Green Scene, hear why the California Attorney General is asking the House of Representatives to vote no on a measure to weaken water quality. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from hikes and concerts to Pine Valley Days, the Heart of Mount Helix, and the Ramona Country Fair, to name just a few. Then we'll have a special feature on the revival of fiddle playing across our region with some excerpts from the National Fiddle Playing Champion. We'll take you to the Old Stone Store in Campo. And we'll tell you about efforts to find the owners of over 100 items believed to be stolen across San Diego County. And finally, we have a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric reminding you to call before you dig in your garden this summer. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The Society of Professional Journalists San Diego Pro Chapter held its annual awards dinner Wednesday night, presenting the coveted Journalist of the Year award to Morgan Cook from the San Diego Union-Tribune for her investigative reporting into Congressman Duncan Hunter's campaign finance scandals. East County Magazine also received four awards from the Society of Professional Journalists. For the fourth time, our editor Miriam Raftery, that's yours truly, received the James Julian Memorial Award for Community Reporting in recognition of coverage of a county report that whitewashed concerns of rural residents over the border fire. Our photographer Rachel Williams received a First Place News Photography Award for her compelling image of Syrian refugee children in El Cajon. Our reporting team, including Rebecca Williamson, Jonathan Goetz, and Robert Gare, shared a breaking news award for coverage of the police shooting of Alfred Alongo and civil unrest that resulted in El Cajon. In addition, we received an audio award for community service broadcasting for our coverage right here on KNSJ Radio of the Helix Water District Candidate Forum, a race in which two longtime incumbents were defeated by challengers. We congratulate our winning news team members, as well as those who have donated to support our nonprofit news in the public interest. These awards bring our total to 101 journalism prizes since we began East County Magazine in 2008. You can read our award-winning stories, subscribe, become a volunteer on our radio show or for our online news magazine, and support our nonprofit news in the public interest at eastcountymagazine.org or donate to support community radio at knsj.org.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July 21st, 2017. I'm Eric Tegedoff. On our rundown today, the Russian probe expands to include an investigation into President Trump's business transactions, the DREAM Act is back in Congress, and a scientific organization says the president's nominee for a top science role at the USDA is unqualified. This and more coming up. the U.S. special counsel investigating possible ties between Trump's campaign and Russia in last year's election is examining Trump's business transactions. Bloomberg News reported Thursday that investigators are looking into Russian purchases of apartments in Trump buildings, the 2013 Miss Universe pageant in Moscow, Trump's sale of a Florida mansion to a Russian oligarch, and more. In an interview with the New York Times Wednesday, Trump said he believes an investigation into his family's finances is out of bounds. In Congress, the DREAM Act, which would grant a pathway to citizenship for undocumented people brought to the U.S. as children, is back. As Suzanne Potter reports from Nevada, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators announced plans on Thursday to reintroduce it.
The Migration Policy Institute estimates there are 30,000 so-called DREAMers in Nevada and up to 1.4 million across the country. Alicia Contreras, Nevada State Director for the group Mi Familia Vota, says giving these young people a chance to succeed in the country where they were raised is simply the right thing to do.
That this was a moral decision, that we cannot encourage folks to apply for administrative relief, identify themselves with the government, and then hold them accountable.
President Donald Trump renewed the program, known as Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, in June. It grants work permits but is not a pathway to citizenship. However, Trump's legislative director, Mark Short, said Wednesday that the president is focused on enforcement and is unlikely to sign a new DREAM Act.
A leading scientific organization says Trump's nominee to be chief scientist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture is unqualified.
Sam Clovis is a conservative radio talk show host and a former advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. He's also a vocal denier of climate change. Karen Stillerman, a senior analyst at the Union of Concerned Scientists, calls the Clovis nomination unacceptable and illegal.
He just does not have the training that's required either by law or just by common sense for someone who is going to be overseeing science at a very large federal department that invests billions of dollars annually in research.
The White House says Clovis has an MBA and a PhD in public administration, and he has worked at the USDA since Trump took office in January. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
A partnership among high-tech, environmental, and academic interest has developed a revolutionary system to measure and map air pollution at a block-by-block level.
The coalition, which includes Google, the Environmental Defense Fund, the University of Texas, and others, is using street mapping technology with cutting-edge monitoring equipment to identify and measure pollution in areas as small as 100 feet apart. Stephen Hamburg, chief scientist with the EDF, says a recently completed test of the system in Oakland, California, was a success, and they are ready to expand the project across the U.S. and to the world.
We're now trying to see, can we do it faster, cheaper, and start to do it at an ever wider range of sites. We're starting to work in other cities and really trying to replicate what we did in Oakland, but learning to do it on a much larger scale.
The venture fitted Google Street View vehicles with real-time air monitors to measure pollution levels as they photograph streets for Google Maps. Hamburg says they built a database of pollution sites during a year-long test over 15,000 miles of Oakland streets. The resulting map identifies air pollution hotspots as small as a single home.
That was Mark Richardson. I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
10 homeless San Diegans have filed a class action against the city of San Diego, challenging citations targeting the homeless as unconstitutional. Homelessness in the city rose 10% over the past year, according to the January 2017 point-in-time homeless count. Most of those people, 5,612 of them, were unsheltered. There are not enough beds and local shelters have long waits. San Diego is also the fourth least affordable city in the nation for housing, making the situation even more bleak for homeless people here. Despite having a shortage of shelters for homeless people to stay in, San Diego police have repeatedly cited and arrested homeless people for violating the city's encroachment code. The code was originally meant to prevent placement of trash bins and planters in the public right-of-way, not to be used against homeless people living in parks or near public walkways. Attorney for plaintiffs Kath Rogers says the city is effectively punishing people eligible for being homeless, 10 News reports. Having arrest records, often multiple times over, merely for sleeping in public places, ironically makes it even harder for homeless people to get jobs and get off the streets. Many homeless can't afford to pay fines and wind up in jail repeatedly as a result. The suit alleges that homeless people are being discriminated against, violating equal protection guarantees in the U.S. Constitution. But some have voiced concern about the suits and want to see homeless encampments cleared out of downtown. But some have voiced concern about the suits and want to see homeless encampments clear out of downtown, citing underlying addiction and mental health issues that have caused concerns for neighbors and business owners. Plaintiff's attorney Scott Dreher has previously sued the city twice before on behalf of the homeless, settling both cases. That litigation led to an end of police destroying personal property of homeless people during sweeps and halting enforcement of an illegal lodging statute from 9 p.m. to 5:30 a.m., leading to a storage center for the homeless funded by the city. The suit seeks a stop to citations against homeless people under the encroachment statute and also asks that all pending charges be dropped against homeless people who have no other place to live. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. A transient, Daniel Moses Cook, is under arrest for the attempted murder of an El Cajon police officer. Officers were dispatched Monday morning to a dollar store where a robbery had been reported. The suspect later went to a KFC restaurant where an employee called to report he stole soda from the fountain. When a police officer entered the KFC, he was violently assaulted by the suspect, who knocked the officer unconscious and then continued kicking him. The officer, a 28-year veteran, has been admitted and is still in an area hospital with significant injuries, says Lieutenant Rob Wainsweiler. After the assault stopped, a female MTS employee who was in the restaurant grabbed the officer's radio and called for help. Lieutenant Rainsweiler says since the downed officer was alone, it may have taken much longer to get the medical aid to him if it were not for the quick thinking and willingness to get involved of this good Samaritan. Cook fled the scene but was found by responding officers in the center median of Fletcher Parkway. He ignored commands to surrender and took a fighting stance, Lieutenant Rainsweiler said. A taser was deployed to control Cook, who was taken into custody without injury. He was found to be in possession of drug paraphernalia and methamphetamine. Cook was booked on attempted murder of a police officer, robbery, drug offenses, and other charges. Anyone with information about this case is encouraged to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the shooting of that El Cajon police officer who has been released from the hospital after suffering serious injuries. In investigating the case, El Cajon police learned that Ayesha Booker, the MTS bus driver who came to the injured officer's aid by using his police radio to transmit officer down and summon help, is currently homeless, along with her 7 children, who range in age from an infant to a 13-year-old. They became homeless after their landlord sold the house where they had been living. Finding a new place for such a large family is difficult, so the family has been sleeping in their vehicle while looking for a new home. Booker is also behind on her car payment and fears her vehicle could soon be repossessed, says Travis Howard, president of the El Cajon Police Officers Association. He commends Ayesha Booker on her bravery and quick thinking, which led to prompt help for the fallen officer as well as arrest of the suspect. So now, the El Cajon Police Officers Association wants to help Ayesha Booker in return. They've set up a GoFundMe page called the Ayesha Fund. And that's spelled I-E-S-H-A, fund, on GoFundMe.com. The police group, along with the El Cajon Firefighters Union, is also working to find emergency housing for the family. Howard concludes, "We are hoping to get public support behind Ayesha and help her out of her financial hardship," adding, "We again want to thank Ayesha for quickly stepping in and assisting our officer."
Mark Dabrowski, a 55-year-old transient in El Cajon, has been arrested and charged with kidnapping and domestic violence. Monday morning, a witness called El Cajon police to report that Dabrowski had abducted his former girlfriend, who is also homeless, while she was sleeping on an elementary school campus. The witness, another homeless woman, was sleeping nearby and was awakened by a physical altercation between Dabrowski and his ex-girlfriend, whom he physically dragged away and forced into his car. The next morning, detectives assigned to the case found the abductor and his victim sleeping in a parked vehicle at a shopping center in Point Loma, according to Lieutenant Walt Miller with the El Cajon Police. Dabrowski was arrested and booked into San Diego County Jail on charges of kidnapping and domestic violence. The event highlights the critical need for housing to protect vulnerable homeless people, particularly victims of domestic violence. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Not long ago, La Mesa overturned a Prohibition-era ban on winemaking. Now, LegalizeFerrets.org, a La Mesa-based group that claims to have 3,000 members, is asking La Mesa City Council to end another long-term ban on ferrets. La Mesa, it seems, is a hotbed of furtive ferret ownership. On June 8th, Pat Wright of LegalizeFerrets.org in La Mesa sent a letter to all council members asking them to declare La Mesa a sanctuary city for ferrets in hopes of helping to change what Wright views as an unjust state law. Ferret ownership is already legal in 48 states, but not California or Hawaii. Advocates of ending ferret prohibition in California believe a sanctuary city designation in La Mesa would be a symbolic victory that could help promote legalization statewide. Ferret owners appear to have found a champion in La Mesa Councilwoman Christine Alicio, who raises Bengal cats and has served as legislative director for the International Cat Association and volunteered with the city's pet therapy program. Ferret legalization advocates held a meeting on July 15th, attended by City Council members Bill Baber and Alicio, to introduce them to the joys of frolicking ferrets. A post on the Legalize Ferrets Facebook page afterwards stated that Alicio promised to help legalize ferrets and even spoke with two local state legislators, thus far without success. But the Facebook page affirms the effort to make La Mesa a ferret sanctuary city builds steam. Alicio told KPBS that she agrees that ferrets are domesticated and make good pets, noting, "We have a whole ferret-loving community that I was unaware of. That's what you do when you're elected. You represent the interest of your constituents." The California Fish and Game Commission has claimed ferrets are wild animals and voiced concerns that they could be released into the wild, competing with native wildlife. Wright counters by saying that this has not occurred in other states where ferrets are allowed. The Fish and Game Commission has refused two petitions, one asking that ferrets be removed from the list of banned pet species, and the other asking that permits be issued for neutered males, as was done prior to the 1985 ban imposed on ferret ownership statewide. To date, no legislator has been willing to introduce a ferret legalization bill in the state legislature after an earlier ferret legalization bill was vetoed by then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who ironically once co-starred with a ferret in the movie Kindergarten Cop. The key concern raised by state officials is that an environmental impact report would be needed at a cost of up to $600,000. The concern that environmentalists could file a lawsuit against the state is another worry. So for now, ferret owners in California are left in a don't ask, don't tell situation, a situation that Wright, the founder of Ferrets Anonymous, hopes to change, starting in La Mesa. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is Rebecca Williamson.
The San Diego County Board of Supervisors this week unanimously approved more than $1 million to equip sheriff's deputies with body-worn cameras. The Sheriff's Department will officially roll out its body camera program next month at the Alpine Sheriff's Station and Ramona Sheriff's Substation. From there, deputies countywide will receive the cameras within 4 to 5 months. During that time, deputies will be trained on how to use the body-worn cameras, as well as preparing and fine-tuning the infrastructure to support the technology. Body cameras have had dramatic results in some other jurisdictions. In Britain, A study by Cambridge University found that complaints against police officers dropped 93% when body cameras were worn. The San Diego Police Department reported a 43% drop in officer misconduct allegations and a 16% drop in serious use of force, such as tasers or mace. In addition, the number of allegations made against police officers later found to be false also increased. So, use of the cameras appears to provide better protection for both the public and officers. Sheriff Bill Gore says the body-worn cameras by sheriff's deputies will help provide another perspective during use of force investigations. Hopefully now, with body-worn cameras, we'll see what started the force, he says. Was it appropriate force? Was it too much force? It'll tell the story. The sheriff's department has been working on implementing body-worn cameras in its law enforcement operations for several years. In 2014, a sheriff's body-worn camera committee was formed and met with law enforcement agencies from across the United States to get feedback on their experiences with the technology. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board was also consulted. Plus, the department met with members of the public to get their input. Last year, the Sheriff's Department unveiled a 90-day pilot program at select stations to try out body-worn cameras from three different companies before making final recommendations approved this week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you need psychiatric help for conditions such as anxiety, depression, substance abuse, psychosis, or a mood disorder, you can get help online through the County of San Diego's telepsychiatry program. Via two-way video and audio, patients countywide can obtain a diagnosis and treatment. The program makes it easier for patients in remote geographic locations. The county's telepsychiatry program started in 2008 to assist North County residents who were dependent on emergency rooms for crisis mental health services. Now is available to patients through county mental health clinics countywide, including services for adults and children. The telepsychiatry program is a high-tech solution for people needing urgent mental health services but with limited transportation, said Alfredo Aguirre, Director of Behavioral Health Services for the County Health and Human Services Agency. Telepsychiatry has been an effective way to deliver services to people in remote areas experiencing a mental health crisis. Telepsychiatry is also used in these clinics as backup coverage when a clinic has a shortage of in-person psychiatry services due to vacancies, provider absences, or when a clinic is over capacity. This service allows more people to be seen, which decreases emergency room visits, prevents declines in mental health, and improves the safety and quality of life for the clients and the community, according to the county. Since the program began, more than 6,000 clients have received mental health services through the telepsychiatry program. Sessions last between 30 minutes and an hour. Surveys find that 85% of people who received telepsychiatric services said they were satisfied with their session, and anyone not comfortable with the process is given the option to receive services in person. Deborah Ellis, a nurse practitioner who also provides telepsychiatry services in a county clinic, says of those whom she serves, "These are people who really need help, and that's what we're here for." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
More than 2 weeks after the 4th of July fireworks, nearly two dozen dogs are still waiting for their owners to claim them at the county's three animal shelters. Many of the dogs ended up there because they ran off in a panic at the first sound of the fireworks booms and whistles. From 9 p.m. on July 4th through July 8th, animal control officers and residents brought in 191 stray or lost dogs to the shelters in San Diego, Bonita, and Carlsbad. Not all of the incoming pets can be blamed on fireworks, but July 5th is typically the busiest day of the year for shelters, and they usually see a heavy influx of lost dogs in the following days. The shelters are required to hold dogs without identification for three business days, not counting the day the dog was rescued or the day the shelters were closed. After that time, the dogs are put up for adoption. Dozens have already gone to new homes. Owners of animals with ID were notified by phone and by mail. The shelters are only required to hold those dogs for five business days. For some owners, that time period ended last week and the dogs started going up for adoption. County Animal Services Director Daniel D'Souza says, "We still have many dogs that weren't picked up by their owners," adding, "We'd rather reunite these dogs with their proper owners, but if they are not claimed within the required time period, then we must change our focus and get these animals into new homes." If your dog is missing, you can check the San Diego County Animal Services Lost and Found website, the adoption page, or visit the three shelters to see if your runaway pet is there. Visit sddac.com for links to all of these sites. Again, that's sddac.com. Owners should check the surrounding shelters, too, because dogs can run from one jurisdiction to another. For example, East County residents could check the El Cajon Animal Shelter in addition to the county shelters. Another option is to check the free facial recognition app Finding Rover to see if your dogs have been found. County Animal Services offers microchipping at all three of its locations every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. There is a small fee which includes national registration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Green Scene Report. California Attorney General Javier Becerra is calling on the U.S. House of Representatives to oppose legislation that would force California to accept water quality standards that are over 22 years old and give up all enforcement of its own higher state standards. The so-called Gaining Responsibility on Water Act, or H.R. 23, would forbid only California from regulating the waters within its own borders. Becerra says, "We have worked hard as a state to protect our rivers, lakes, and waterways. They are important parts of our economic development and what makes California a great place to live, work, and raise a family. Why should we have to accept water quality standards that are over two decades old?" he asked, adding, "Why is California being singled out when our leadership on the environment is well known and has even been acknowledged by EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt? I hope my former colleagues see right through this extraordinarily flawed legislation and vote against it. That California is being singled out directly conflicts with historic principles of Western water law. In California versus United States, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed California's rights to enforce state laws and conditions on federal reclamation projects. The High Court declared that the history of the relationship between the federal government and the states in the reclamation of the arid lands of the Western states is both long and involved, but through it runs the consistent thread of purposeful and continued deference to state water law by Congress. The bill in Congress would also require state agencies, such as the Department of Water Resources, the State Water Resources Control Board, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, to implement federal policies in violation of state sovereignty principles set forth in the 10th Amendment and other provisions of the U.S. Constitution. The action is the latest by Attorney General Becerra to ensure that California remains a leader on environmental issues. Within the last 2 weeks alone, he has challenged the Trump administration for unlawfully delaying the waste prevention rule, which requires oil and natural gas producers to significantly cut wasteful leakage of methane on federal lands, and has taken action against the EPA due to its failure to reduce methane emissions from existing oil and natural gas operations, as is required under federal law.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the Jungle Book movie at La Mesita Park, a museum roadshow at Cuyamaca College, a family hike, and a falconry presentation at Santa Isabel Preserve, plus community concerts in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, El Cajon, and Santee.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Mariah Carey and Lionel Richie in concert at San Diego State, a murder mystery dinner theater in Julian, Pine Valley Days, the Pomerado Jazz Quintet at Mission Trails, a sip of Julian, the heart of Mount Helix, the Ramona Country Fair, and a Laurel and Hardy film showing in Spring Valley.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The City of La Mesa invites you to enjoy an outdoor movie in the park on Friday, July 21st. Bring a picnic, lawn chair, or blanket and enjoy the 2016 version of The Jungle Book, starring Mowgli and his animal friends in the jungle. The movie will be shown on a large screen at La Mesita Park on Dallas Street, just below Parkway Middle School in La Mesa, starting 15 minutes after sunset.
Heritage of the Americas Museum at Cuyamaca College invites you to the Museum Roadshow this Saturday, July 22nd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Are there treasures in your closet? Now you can find out by bringing in your finds to have an appraiser, Craig Helm, give you information and an estimate of what it's worth. At a past Museum Roadshow, one East County resident discovered that an item she'd purchased at a local garage sale was actually a very valuable Chinese Ming vase from the 15th century. Helm's specialties are Native American and pre-Columbian artifacts, antique pictures, Western memorabilia, and Asian artifacts. He does not appraise stamps, gems, or minerals, and guns are not allowed on the college campus. There is a small cost for appraisals, which benefits the museum's children's programs. For more information, you can visit heritageoftheamericasmuseum.com.
You can join Ranger Eric in a short beginner's trek through Santa Isabel East County Preserve to learn essentials for a successful hike. This introduction of family hiking will be held on Saturday, July 22nd, from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Learn what to wear, pack, eat, and drink before and during your hike. For more information, you can call the Santa Isabel East County Preserve at 760-765-4098.
Learn about the world's oldest hunting style and sport of kings from Master Falconer Cisco Seborn on Sunday, July 23rd from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Santa Isabel East County Preserve in Julian. Visitors will experience the world's fastest animal, the peregrine falcon, in action as he swoops down to allure. Bring a hat, water, and sunscreen to this event at the West Preserve, which meets in the staging area. For more information, call 760-765-4908.
La Mesa's season end to its Sundays at 6 concert series will be this Sunday, July 23rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park. Sonic Epidemic will perform horn tunes of the 70s.
Lemon Grove's Summer Concerts in the Park series continues each Thursday night from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Berry Street Park in Lemon Grove. The lineup includes the Three Court Justice Country Music on July 27th, the Bill McGee Blues Band on August 3rd, West of Five playing rock from the 70s through today on August 10th, and the Bayou Brothers with their Cajun and Zydeco music of New Orleans on August 17th. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic to have a barbecue in the park for these community events, but alcohol is not allowed.
Santee's Summer Concert Series is held each Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. Next Thursday, July 27th, features an Elvis Presley tribute by James Crook and the Big Boss Man. On August 3rd, Three Chord Justice will play Boot Scootin' Country. August 10th is Wingstock Night, featuring a beer garden, foods from Wings and Things, and music from the summer of 1969. On August 17th, Upstream will perform Caribbean and reggae music. Santee's summer concert season ends on August 24th with variety music by the Mighty Untouchables.
El Cajon offers its summer concerts on Friday nights all summer long. The next few shows include a Santana tribute by the Santana Waves on July 21st, the Fabulous Pelicans playing classic rock on July 28th, tropical rock with Stars on the Water August 4th, and modern country music by Patrick Trampas on August 11th. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Music superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey will rock the night at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on July 27th at 7 p.m. as part of their All the Hits tour. Richie has won an Oscar, 4 Grammy Awards, and 16 American Music Association Awards, among many other honors. He defied his parents and joined a band to escape Alabama and become one of Motown's biggest success stories. Mariah Carey is the best-selling female artist of all time, with more than 200 million albums sold to date and 18 Billboard number one singles, the most of any solo artist in history. Carey has won 5 Grammy Awards and the World Music Award for World's Best-Selling Female Artist of the Millennium. Tickets are available at the Viejas Arena website.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Julian Triangle Club invites you to help solve a hilarious crime at a murder mystery theater set for Friday night, July 28th from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the historic Julian Town Hall. Dinner will be catered by Jeremy's on the Hill. A well-seasoned county fair opens under a cloud as a real estate tycoon plots to buy it out and close it down. This riles the locals who love the fair, especially the pig races, which are being targeted by protesters. Add in female country singers who will stop at nothing to claw past each other to get to the top, plus some romancing, and you have the stage set for shenanigans and murder. The table that gives the best correct answer of whodunit before the killer is revealed will walk away with a stellar prize basket. For tickets or details, contact the Julian Triangle Club at 760-525-5137 or email juliantriangleclub@gmail.com. You can also learn more at julianca.com.
Pine Valley Days takes place July 28th and 29th. This annual tradition begins on Friday, July 28th with a deep pit barbecue and live music by Barb Wire. Then, on Saturday, July 29th, the Pine Valley Days parade rolls through the town, followed by a day of fun festivities in the Pine Valley Park, including kids' activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music and food, and a horseshoe tournament. For details, check the Pine Valley Days 2017 page on Facebook.
The Pomerado Brass Quintet will perform a concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, July 30th at 3 p.m. in the Outdoor Amphitheater. The Brass Quintet's repertoire includes classical, marches, jazz, ragtime, Dixieland, and Broadway musical selections. For more information, you can visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
The Julian Chamber of Commerce will host the 3rd annual Sip of Julian on Saturday, August 5th from 11 to 5 p.m. The Sip features growers and producers of hard cider, wine, craft beer, showing that Julian has much more to savor beyond apple pies. This event is a fundraising benefit for Julian's annual country Christmas and tree lighting celebration. For more information, you can visit julian.com.
The 10th annual Heart of Mount Helix on August 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. will feature live art demonstrations and art auctions, music on two stages, a juried art show, succulent plant sale, and tastings from top local restaurants atop Mount Helix. The cherished Party on the Hill attracts around 500 guests annually, with funds benefiting the Mount Helix Park Foundation for upkeep of the amphitheater and park facilities. For tickets and the lineup of this year's entertainers, artists, restaurants, and other participants, visit mthelixpark.org and click on the Heart of Mount Helix link.
The annual Ramona Country Fair will be held August 24th to 27th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. crafts, carnival rides, contests, vendors, live music, fair food, and lots of fun are highlights of this event. A Western show and the second Ramona Motorcycle Rally are also being held this year. The fair is open Thursday and Friday evening, August 24th and 25th, and all day on Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th.
Thelma, Stan, and Ollie will be the theme at the next gathering of the Saps at Sea, the Laurel and Hardy Sons of the Desert Association in San Diego, on August 26th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The event highlights works of Thelma Todd. This bubbly blonde was not only a highly respected actress and comedian, but a longtime favorite of the Saps, featured in several hilarious comedy clips that will be shown.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally. According to the National Association of Music Manufacturers, and locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, "I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin," he adds, "fiddle music calls you to dance." Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old Time Fiddlers Association, but he says the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All three pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a 2-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, three of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed a festival waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell Brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
Mm-hmm.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
The San Diego District Attorney's Office is looking for the owners of hundreds of items that have been impounded by law enforcement in connection to a burglary series throughout San Diego County. A treasure trove of items was found in a storage unit belonging to a serial burglary suspect. Photos of all the items can be found on the DA's Facebook page. They include jewelry, artwork, stamp collections, photographs, keys, and much more. If you recognize any of the more than 100 items, please contact the DA so that you can be reunited with your property and the suspected thief held accountable. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Eberena with a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric. SDG&E has issued a reminder to the public about the importance of calling 811 before you dig. Last year, nearly 283 natural gas lines were damaged by third-party contractors or residents digging, which is an increase from that same time period in 2014. Calling 811 or Underground Service Alert will help avoid possible injury or damage to hidden gas lines or service interruption. Scott Ferguson, Vice President of Gas Operations at SDG&E, states, "Damaging a natural gas line can pose a significant safety risk and disrupt natural gas service. We ask everyone, whether digging at a construction site or at their homes, to make a quick 811 phone call to Underground Service Alert to have utility-owned lines marked for free. Before digging, residents, business owners, and contractors should mark the proposed excavation area and call 811 at least 2 business days before the project is scheduled to begin. Underground Service Alert will contact all local utilities for free to have them locate and mark the underground lines, pipes, and cables they own. For more information about safe digging or to submit an online request, visit digalert.org. If you suspect a gas emergency or have questions regarding a gas odor or carbon monoxide, call SDG&E immediately at 800-411-7343. It's important to keep in mind that natural gas is flammable and that something as simple as a spark can serve as an ignition source. Use your sense of sight, hearing, and smell and any of the following signs to alert you to the presence of a gas leak. Look for the following: dirt or water being blown in the air, dead or dying vegetation over or near pipeline areas, a fire or explosion near a pipeline, exposed pipeline after an earthquake, fire, flood, or other disaster, and bubbles in puddles outdoors after a rain. You should listen for an unusual sound such as a hissing, whistling, or roaring sound near a pipeline, and you should smell for the distinctive odor of natural gas. However, although SDG&E adds a distinctive odor to natural gas to aid in the detection of leaks, you should not rely on your sense of smell alone to determine if you have a gas leak. For more safety information, visit sdge.com/safety.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.